Hello, everyone. Dan Dillman here, bringing you another episode of A Little of This, A Little of That. Thank you so much for tuning in today, for dialing into 101.5 on your FM dial. We try to entertain you, we try to inform you, and be careful now, once in a while we try to amuse you. I'm sure that you've experienced a lot of pain at the gas pump in the recent days, and I wanted to talk a little bit about that, about the skyrocketing gas prices that are squeezing working Americans and feeding inflation. Just how did we get here? Well, I'll do my best to cover a few of the answers to that. Here we are. How high are gas prices? Average gasoline prices hit an all-time high of over $5 a gallon recently. And this is up $3.40 from last December. A staggering hike of more than 40%. But just why has this happened? The simple law of supply and demand. When the coronavirus shut down the world in the spring of 2020, global demand for oil plunged. It went down to the point where the cost of a barrel barely dipped below zero. U.S. oil companies sitting on brimming tanks of crude oil that they could not sell, slashed production in response. And then, as Americans returned to work and traveled in large numbers last year, demand snowballed faster than oil producers had anticipated. They were severely behind the curve. In February of 2020, domestic oil fields were producing nearly 13 million barrels of crude daily. This February, the output was 11 million barrels. That same month, Russia invaded Ukraine, and the global supply took another hit. How did the war affect oil? Russia is one of the world's largest oil producers and the second biggest exporter of crude oil after Saudi Arabia. But when Western nations hit Moscow with economic sanctions, these sanctions meant to punish for waging war on Ukraine, Russian exports plummeted. That sent global prices skyward because oil is traded on a global market. The reduction in supply raised the per barrel price, even for countries that didn't buy very much oil from Russia. And in the U.S., which banned all Russian energy imports last March, Russian oil made up less than 8% of the total. While Russia has found new buyers, the price of crude is now about $120 a barrel, nearly double what it was a year ago. The solution might seem straightforward. Just have oil companies ramp up their output. But it's not that simple. Why can't they just pump more oil? It's not like turning on a spigot. Companies that had shut down wells and laid off thousands of workers cannot immediately pick up where they left off. So any effort to boost production won't affect prices in the near term. Starting a rig takes 6 to 8 months, even without the pandemic-induced shortages of labor and equipment and materials. And then there's another problem. Reluctance within the industry to invest in expanding production as is the U.S., the world shifts away from fossil fuels and toward renewable energy and electric and high-efficiency vehicles. Long-term profits don't seem like a safe bet, even though they see high prices today. An energy economist at MIT has said, the oil companies are afraid the prices are going to tank over the life of that well. And as a result, oil companies are feeling pressure from Wall Street to use profits to reward shareholders rather than invest in new production. And even if production spiked tomorrow, all that oil couldn't quickly be turned into gasoline. We lack enough oil refineries to do it. Since 2019, the U.S. has lost more than 5% of its refining capacity. That's more than 1 million barrels a day. As money-losing facilities have been shuttered or refitted to process biofuels. That trend has been mirrored in the rest of the world, which has lost an additional capacity of more than 2 million barrels a day. And just like the situation with drilling, gas producers worried about drops in the future demand and are reluctant to make investments required to expand capacity. Few new U.S. refineries have been built in decades, and none are planned. That means there are no quick fixes for consumers, and a high gas price doesn't just raise the cost of fill-up. Because the U.S. is so large, and so many goods are trucked long distances to stores, the price of gas affects the price of everything else, which further drives inflation upward. And then we shouldn't leave this subject without saying a word about the oil executives who are raking in the profits right now. Are the gas companies price gouging? Well, critics point out that the companies are posting record profits, more than $35 billion for the top five firms in the first 3 months of 2022. But while higher prices do mean higher profits, experts point out that oil companies have no power over crude oil prices. These are set by a global market. One of the problems is certainly that oil companies are using their cash to reward CEOs and shareholders rather than to expand production. But it's also true that they have scant incentive to expand, given that the present administration and environmentalists want to wean the nation off of oil to slow climate change. The world needs more oil output today, but it needs less in the future. That's a very difficult needle to thread. It's going to be a very curious outcome to this, I think. Stay tuned. Well, it's midsummer. Guess what defines midsummer? Along the broad beaches of southwestern Michigan, blueberries. Michigan, you know, is the top producing state for cultivated blueberries. Blueberries needed a champion. And Tiffany Balk was more than up to the task. 15 years ago, she went to send a gift to a friend in Chicago from her home in Grand Haven, Michigan. Her husband suggested a box of dried cherries, the signature crop of the Traverse City area. But Grand Haven is 150 miles south of Traverse City, west of Grand Rapids, on the eastern shore of Lake Michigan. A totally different area, totally different vibe. Mrs. Balk told her husband, that won't work. Blueberries, she said, are to southwest Michigan like cherries are to northern Michigan. As soon as she heard herself say that, she realized she had hit on a niche business. The blueberries are indeed the little, round, cute, colorful crop that defines midsummer along the gentle dunes and the broad beaches of the east coast of Lake Michigan. Like dried cherries, cranberries and raisins, and dried blueberries certainly add a jolt of flavor in cookies, cakes, and salads. Blueberries freeze beautifully, meaning that the crop can yield mix-ins for breads and muffins all year round. Blueberry season typically blooms around July 4th, and it continues through the end of August, with different varieties rolling into Michigan farm stands along Interstate Highway 196. U-Pick Farms offer a taste of the back-breaking work of hand-raking blueberries. Every Michigan farmer's market spills with baskets and buckets and boxes of blueberries. And along with July marking National Blueberry Month, South Haven's National Blueberry Festival is set this year for August 11th and 14th, and it's another great excuse to indulge with children's pie-eating contests, a parade here and there, and certainly a blueberry pie social. You see, blueberries love light, sandy soil, which makes the beaches and the bluffs of southwestern Michigan a perfect setting for growing 110 million pounds of berries that the state produced in 2020. That makes Michigan the leading national producer of cultivated blueberries, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, with Washington and Oregon and Georgia trailing behind. And then, here's some blueberry trivia for you. As you travel through the area of Western Michigan, blueberries were a staple for indigenous American tribes who originally occupied what's now known as the Midwest. They were found as far south as the Mexican border and as far north as eastern Canada and Alaska. The 35 species of blueberries that are indigenous to North America were an uncelebrated seasonal staple until a government botanist crafted cultivars that could sustain commercial farming. The discovery of their antioxidant properties vaulted blueberries from dessert ingredient to health food staple. It takes only a half a cup or 30 calories worth of blueberries to deliver one quarter of the recommended daily amount of vitamin C. and 3 grams of dietary fiber. That according to the Mayo Clinic. About half of the 690 million pounds of blueberries produced in 2020 were sold fresh and the rest were processed. So my word for the day, advice to you for the day, is that you should get over to Western Michigan because the blueberry season is going now at full speed, and it's difficult not to see them or drive past a blueberry farm. So get over there and buy your blueberries for your pies, your cakes, and your breakfast cereal. Now we'll take a break for a moment or two. Are you going to drive on your vacation this summer? Well, a lot of people are. Summer 2022. Here are a list of must-see attractions. If you're with the family and in the car and wondering what might be interesting to see, I'm going to spend the next maybe 10 minutes or so telling you about some interesting places to consider. First of all, the largest concentration of bald eagles. Every November, hundreds, sometimes thousands of bald eagles soar into the Chilkoot Valley near Haines, Alaska. The churning groundwater prevents the river from freezing, and so fresh fish can inhabit the area. Fresh fish for the eagles to feast on. All the way through December. So even if you can't get up there later on this fall, if you think a trip to Alaska might be fun, why, make sure you go to Haines, Alaska, the Chilkoot Valley. Or if you're in another part of the country in the lower 48, think about this. The International Dark Sky Association, IDA, has certified 20 dark sky reserves in the world. And these are places with an exceptional or distinguished quality of starry nights and nocturnal environment. They're protected so that they'll stay that way. And the Central Idaho Dark Sky Reserve, which is the only one of its kind in the U.S., encompasses 1,400 square miles of rugged, remote lands in the Sawtooth Mountains. Y'all bring a flashlight now, you hear? And let's say that you're on the other side of the U.S. If you're on the East Coast, maybe you're in Washington, D.C., well, the world's largest library is there. That's the Library of Congress. It's come a long way since Tom Jefferson sold 6,500 of his own books to the U.S. government for a sum of $24,000. That's almost $500,000 in 2022 dollars. To rebuild the fledgling library after it was destroyed in the War of 1812. And now the library's collection of more than 173 million items includes 40 million plus books in 470 languages, as well as the world's largest collection of films, maps, and sheet music. Also here, there is a rough draft of the Declaration of Independence. There's Rosa Parks' recipe for peanut butter pancakes. Sounds good to me. And a Stradivarius violin, which was made in 1704. So if you're in the Washington, D.C. area this summer, stop in at the Library of Congress. I think you'll enjoy it. But let's say that you're going on north into New England and you're up in New Hampshire. Maybe even nearby is Hinsdale, New Hampshire. Well, that place has the oldest post office in the United States. It's turning 206 this year, making it the oldest continuously operating post office in America. It opened back in 1816 in a corner of the town's general store, and later it took over the entire first floor. So that's Hinsdale, New Hampshire, the oldest post office in the U.S. There are many other things to see in this wonderful country. And one of them is also here in New England, in Portland, Maine. It's the first cryptozoology museum in Portland, Maine, which is the home to the world's museum devoted to cryptids, animals like Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster that may or may not exist. Items on display at the International Cryptozoology Museum include hair samples from the abominable snowman, a life-size real-life dog kangaroo, a hybrid from Tasmania, now extinct, and includes a fur-bearing trout. Imagine that. If you're looking for the oldest still-running restaurant, you can find that in New England as well. The White Horse Tavern in Newport, Rhode Island, began serving guests in 1673, which means it's nearly 100 years older than the second place contender, a tavern in New York City. And it's more than 100 years older than the United States itself. There have been just 9 owners of this tavern in almost 350 years, except for one short hiccup. It's stayed in one family for 200 years. I'm looking at a picture of it now, and this is not a one-story restaurant. This is a 2.5-story restaurant with a gambrel roof. It looks like an oversized barn. So get up to New Hampshire, or get to Rhode Island on your way to New Hampshire, and you'll see an interesting place. And then there is the first presidential retreat. Before Camp David, there was the summer retreat that Herbert Hoover built near the Rapidan River in Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains. 3 of the Rapidan Camp's original 13 buildings remain. They've been restored to their original 1932 condition. The Hoovers paid for the land and the building supplies for the camp. President Hoover spent many hours fishing and entertaining dignitaries such as Charles Lindbergh and Edsel Ford and Mrs. Roosevelt. That's Mrs. Theodore Roosevelt, Jr. Hoover donated the camp, referred to as the Brown House, to the Commonwealth of Virginia when he left office. And it's now part of the Shenandoah National Park. A beautiful area. So if you're there this summer, look at the first Camp David. Well, it's time to look down the road get ready to leave today. Sorry about that. But the clock on the wall is my enemy. Next time, when you tune in to a little of this, a little of that, you'll hear about La Nina's bizarre staying power. American weather is growing more extreme, or bizarre, thanks to an unwelcome meteorological visitor, the climate pattern La Nina. And then you'll hear about timing your workout. Men and women may get more out of their exercise depending on what time of the day they work out. And finally, if you think your garden's out of control, there is an area along the west coast of Australia, home to the world's largest plant. It keeps cloning itself 4,500 years and stretches over 100 miles. Keep that in mind, and you be safe, stay well, be kind to each other. And now it's time for Willie and I to head down the road again, looking for more items to entertain you, to inform you, and maybe to amuse you with. So, here we go, Willie. Let's go down the road again. See you all next time. Remember, without you, we're not here.